Summer months, when we have just one service, they're good for us. I think it's good for a congregation to kind of get it all together at one service, find out who we are and what's going on, and we're able to detect who's sick more easily. And when you're absent, when we all meet together, it's more easily detected. Perhaps our needs are more easily met. But I think every particular time of the year has its purpose and its meaning, has its special value. And I think these summer months have been good for us to be together more closely than perhaps we are during the other months of the year. It's been a beautiful day. I hope that your worship has been rewarding to you and pleasing to God. Hope you've been strengthened for this week that's ahead of us. May God bless us while we study together tonight. Whatever Happened to Father is the title of an article by David L. Antione, in which he simply says that parents are going to have to spend more time with their children if they would prevent or avoid a generation gap developing in their family. And that's true. Just last week in the newspaper, I saw a cartoon in the Peanuts column where some boys, Charlie Brown and others, were telling this young girl to go on home, that baseball was a boys' game. And they said, "Why don't you go on home?" And she says, "I can't go home. My dad is out of town and my mother's at the office designing a new freeway." And I thought, well, he got pretty well to the heart of the matter. It's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? And yet that's pretty well true in so much of our society today. Our domestic relationships have become upset. Our domestic scene is unstable. The declining role of the father, the changed role of the mother, is causing our society to be torn apart literally, thread by thread. Tonight, I want to study with you a lesson entitled The Stumbling of a Child. And it will be the last in a series of sermons on the home. We've been noticing them. I think we've studied three different lessons, and this will be the fourth and final at this present time. The primary emphasis on the other lessons, or in those other lessons, was the relationship of husband to wife and wife to husband, and how to build a firm, strong and sure relationship as a marriage. We noticed also some of the pressures and tensions that cause the marriage to be put under such a stress that often it breaks down and then finally breaks up. But in all of this, we've noticed primarily the relationship of husband and wife and the effect that these things have on that relationship. But in this lesson tonight, I want to turn our attention to the effect, the devastating effect, that these particular stresses and strains and the breakdown of the home life has upon the children of the home. And that'll be our emphasis tonight. And I want us to look at it in the light of Matthew, the 18th chapter, where Jesus said, "Whoever causes one of these little ones that believes on me to stumble, it were better for him that a large millstone be fastened about his neck and that he be drowned in the depths of the sea." That's a pretty serious condemnation. There are many factors that adversely affect the development of a child. There are many outside and inside influences. If we were to be asked tonight, what are some of the outside influences that adversely affect the emotional development of a child? I think we'd have to list at the first, probably, an affluent society that provides too much time and too much money, too much leisure, too little work and too little responsibility and too little sacrifice, and lays all of this superfluous or all of this affluence on a silver platter and puts it on a silver spoon and places it in the mouth of an eagerly awaiting younger generation. I think I would place an affluent society as one of the foremost external causes that are, I think, detrimental to the development of a child today. I think you'd have to also point out the fanciful world of television, the make-believe, immediate response, and immediate gratification fancy that television seems to portray before the eyes of our young people. S.I. Hayakawa mentioned that the children who were born since 1945 have never known a world that did not have total television, practically. And television has been used as a babysitter, and it has had a great part in shaping the attitudes of our society. I think you'd have to point to corrupt entertainment and corrupt entertainers being held up, you know, before the eyes of our young people as stars and as idols and as celebrities. I think this has had an adverse effect upon our youth. I think you'd have to point to education that ignores God, an education that ignores morality and moral standards as having any place in the life of a developing human being. There are many things that you could point to as external causes and externally or external contributing factors to the detrimental development or the development of a child that causes him to be detrimentally or malformed in some way or other. But I'm not too interested in those external factors tonight. I want to talk to you about what I consider to be the two basic factors. They, I guess, could be looked upon as internal or at least domestic. They relate to the family. They relate to that divine incubator that God placed among human beings for the purpose of developing human beings and letting them grow up in a well-ordered fashion. These two contributing factors are pointed up in a statement made by Mr. Armand M. Nicolai II in an article found in the booklet called Quest for Reality, Christianity and the Counterculture. On page 9, he says, an increasing number of young people come from backgrounds in which the family has virtually disintegrated. At no time in history has the integrity of the family been more severely jeopardized by both internal and external forces. A home in which both parents are available to the child emotionally as well as physically has become the exception rather than the rule. And I use that simply as a springboard to introduce to you tonight what I consider to be the two chief causes for the inadequate development of children in our modern society. And those two contributing causes simply being the absent mother and the inaccessible father. And if I were to be pressed, I think from now on, I could not come to any more accurate description of the two contributing causes to the breakdown of our modern society today. The first of these, the absent mother, we've already noticed it in the sermons prior to this. We noticed it, however, in relation to its impact upon the marriage as it puts a strain upon the husband and wife relationship. We've quoted the statistics. Last night in the TV announcements, one of the firms in Little Rock made an announcement and addressed itself to the wives, or to the, what is it called, the housewives, was the audience to which it addressed itself. I think it was the Timex Corporation, and offered the housewife employment in the corporation there, told her what the wages were and how much extra overtime she would get and all of this, all the goodies and all the fringe benefits, and it addressed itself to the housewives of the community. The statistics that were quoted maybe 2 weeks ago, nearly half of all the wives in their early 20s in America now are working, and over 40% of all housewives in their late 20s are now employed, and one-third of all the wives of all ages in America are now employed outside the home. But that's not really what concerns us tonight. Another statistic that was referred to in that U.S. News and World Report article of April 16, 1973, another statistic was cited there out of a book called Windows on Daycare by Mary Dublin Kieserling, and that statistic is simply this. 6 million children of preschool age have working mothers. 6 million children of preschool age have working mothers. Well, that statistic is frightening. I don't know whether you understand or don't. I think probably you do. 6 million children who are of preschool age have working mothers. 6 million preschool children evidently spend the majority of their waking hours under someone's care other than the one that bore them. Now, the cause for the mother being absent really doesn't make much difference. Whether she's absent for working purposes or whether she's absent for some other reason really doesn't make much difference. The mother may have chosen to go to work. She may have had to go to work out of necessity because of the incapacitating of a husband, the taking of him out of the scene, either by death or by divorce or by illness. That doesn't really make any difference to the child. It may be that your motive for going to work was noble. It may be that it was ignoble. I don't know. That also really doesn't make any difference to the child. Because you see, the child isn't concerned about the why. In fact, it doesn't have any interest in the why. And it cannot understand the why, the cause, or the purpose, or the reason for your being absent from him. All that a child really can understand, and especially a preschool child, and I don't know where it diminishes to the point that it doesn't make any difference. I wonder if it ever does until the child has gone away from home. But a child of that age cannot understand the why. All it knows is the what. And the what is simply this: my mother is away from me. And that's all it understands. That's the only thing that it can comprehend, the what. The other day, a young teenage girl came to me, troubled, and she was employed as a full-time babysitter for this woman who was working, and her little baby, a 2 or 3 year old child, was being kept by this teenage girl. And this young girl came to me in troubled and said, "This little child cannot understand why she shouldn't call me mother." And she didn't quite know what to do about it. The little child was attempting to create some kind of an emotional bond. And she was trying to create it with this one who was with her most of her waking hours. But that wasn't her mother. Her mother was away working. But it seemed that she didn't have this relationship or didn't seem to understand. And can't you see the turmoil that that child was placed in because of the lack of constant care on the part of its mother? So I say the causes of mother's absence really doesn't make much difference. Who keeps your child and where the child is kept really doesn't make any difference. I'm sure there would be some variance of opinion or some difference in perhaps the effect, but it's not all that significant that you could point to it and say this is this degree of adverse effect and this other has a lesser degree of an adverse effect. But there are a lot of children cared for in daycare centers. The U.S. has today only a capacity in its daycare centers to care for about 625,000 children in the daycare centers. We have 6 million children who are of preschool age who need caring for while their mothers work. Others are cared for, and the majority of the young people, the children of preschool age, are cared for in homes by domestic help. Now, they're either cared for in the home of the child, but more often than not, they're cared for in someone else's home, where the child is taken from its own home and carried and placed in another home in different surroundings and cared for by a person who has little or no training, and there's little or no organization involved, and also there's little training involved as far as the participation of the child in any organized training. These are statistics and things that have been brought out by research. The main thing that's involved is the simple lack of constant care. And it's simply for this reason. The way our personnel turns over today, and it's increasing, the turnover of personnel, and it must affect the daycare centers equally as much as it affects other employment places of employment, plus the fact that our rootlessness, as far as our families are concerned, that causes the average American family, and I'm going to state a figure, but I don't know whether to state it or not. I had thought that the average moving, the average length of time before a family moves in America is 2 years. Anybody know for sure? Is it 2 years? I think it is, yes. The average, the rootlessness in American family life that causes us to have an average moving time of 2 years or an average living time of 2 years before we move, that's the average family in America. simply means this: the turnover in employment that must affect the daycare centers, plus the rootlessness that causes us as families to move every 2 years, causes us then, those of us who are depending upon someone else taking care of our children other than us, other than ourselves, it means that simply we're failing to provide that constant affection that is absolutely essential in the development, the emotional development of a child. Let me read something for you. One of the statements made concerning the lack of constant affection in a child's life was made in this U.S. News and World Report article. The important thing is constant affection. When you have a frequently changing cast taking care of a young child, he is unable to form the emotional bonds that a youngster needs, and the child feels abandoned. That's page 74 of that report. Listen to this warning. Experts warn that care for children of working mothers is posing large questions for the future of these youngsters. Dr. Ernest Van Den Haag, a noted New York City psychoanalyst, says that children under the age of 3 should neither be placed in daycare centers nor be left with a series of babysitters. That's on page 74 of that same article. Now, I cite these experts, if you want to call them that, and I think they at least have earned that title. I cite these human experts because it seems that we're just really not giving much heed at all to the divine admonition and to the divine limitations placed upon us in our role as mothers and fathers in the home. I find that whenever the Apostle Paul said to Titus that he was to teach the older women to train the younger women to love their husbands and their children and to be sensible and chaste and domestic and submissive to their husbands, that the word of God may not be discredited, I find that we as the church are just as guilty of disregarding that statement as much of the world is guilty of disregarding it. I find very little, if any, difference in the attitude that you and I as Christian people have toward this restriction here between our attitude and the attitude that's in the world tonight. We just don't seem to care. In fact, we say, well, I know he said that. We're supposed to do these things and we're supposed to be domestic. And the word here, domestic, simply means this. The word oikouros, in the Greek, the word their, the their lexicon, makes this statement. He says that oikouros means this. It means literally a keeper or a watcher of a house. And it says it means that a person is to be keeping at home and taking care of the household duties or household affairs. It means that she is to be domestic. It means that she is to be a keeper of the home. It means that she's to be a keeper at home, Thayer says, and taking care of the household duties or household affairs, and that she is to be domestic. But it seems that we've accepted this verse and we've more or less sidestepped it and said, yes, I think it does mean a domestic person, a person who is interested in home things, but it doesn't really mean that the mother and the wife is supposed to stay at home and really make that the first thing of her life, the first interest and the first concern. I think we're wrong. And I'm confident that science today is proving us as a people wrong in our attitude toward the mother's place in the home. And I think we're going to reap the consequences of it. I look out across the land and I see the breakdown of the homes. And if I could come to one conclusion, it would be this. All of this could have been avoided if for one thing, we had left the mothers in the home and not placed them in the workforce out in the world as we have today. We have an example in 1 Timothy 5, 9 and 10, an example of a Christian woman. Listen to what it says about her. She must be the wife of one husband. This is talking about the widows who could be supported. But when you look at it, you'll see that it's an example, or it holds up an example of Christian womanhood. She's to be the wife of one husband. She must be well attested for her good deeds as one who has brought up children, not paid somebody else to bring them up. She's brought them up, shown hospitality, washed the feet of the saints, relieved the afflicted, and devoted herself to doing good in every way. These are the characteristics of a woman that is held up as being an example of Christian womanhood. We find other references, and the whole tenor of the New Testament atmosphere is centered around an active home, where a mother is in charge of raising the children, where a father is definitely involved, as we'll notice in a moment, in the instruction and nurturing and admonition of the child. But if I could point first of all to one cause, one major cause, of the breakdown of the home and the detrimental effect that it's having upon the emotional development of children, it would be this one thing, that our mothers being away from the children for the majority of the waking hours of the child is creating a lack of constancy of affection necessary to the development of stable emotions and to the development of sacred, stable bonds of affection between the child and some stable part of society that God intended to be the home and the mother. But we're lacking that. And as a result, we're raising a generation of young people who have that emotional gap in their development. And we are now reaping the consequences of it. But let me mention the second thing. And that is the inaccessible father. The absent mother that takes the child away from and robs him of any real meaningful constant affection. But the second thing is the inaccessible father. The husband's role in the home is much more important than we have allowed it to be, or much more important than we've suspected that it is. Let me read a passage here. This is taken from this same, from another article here, The Quest for Reality. And the statement simply says this: although awareness that absent parents often produce resentful or disturbed children can hardly be considered a recent discovery, we have only recently become aware of the full emotional impact on the child, especially the impact of the inaccessible or absent father. I was surprised. I was not aware that science had established such an important position for the husband in the home. Listen to this statement. This is from the U.S. News and World Report article. Child psychologists cite the disproportionate number of delinquents usually originating from homes where the father is absent or where both parents work. Now, this absent father here in the context means the father who has absented himself because of divorce and he is now permanently absent. But whether it's one who is permanently absent because of divorce, or whether it's one who is simply absent either physically or emotionally in the sense that he is inaccessible to his children, it has a similar and related effect. It has a similar effect to the being gone or absent permanently. Ephesians, the 6th chapter and verse 4, has been telling us this for nearly 2,000 years, that it's the father's responsibility to train and raise up the child. In Ephesians, the 6th chapter and verse 4, the apostle there makes the statement, "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them," or bring them up in the nurturing and admonition of the Lord. This is the father's position. It's the father's place. We fathers have looked upon this with this explanation. It is our responsibility. But I have delegated this responsibility to my wife. And now, under my authority as the head of the house, the wife is going to do the raising of the children. She's going to do their instructing, their disciplining. She's going to tell them about God. She's going to provide companionship for them while I'm out making a living. But let me tell you something. Fathers, that won't work. Your position in the home, your presence there, both physically and emotionally, is just as important as the presence of the mother in that home. And it has a very vital part to play in the development of that child. The presence of the mother in the home provides that constant affection that a little tiny child begins first to draw from the mother from the very time that it either nurses from the mother or sits or lies in the mother's arm while the mother holds the bottle in the child and feeds the child. That presence of the mother develops this constant emotional bond upon which a child develops and establishes his feeling of dependence and his feeling of security. And if you don't get that from the mother, I don't know who's going to give it to him. Some other person who may fill the place of a mother will give it to him. But the father's place in the home is related to that in the sense that the position of the father in the home is an authority figure. He's the head of the house. He's the one who's supposed to set guidelines. He's the one who's supposed to set boundaries of conduct. He's the one who's supposed to say, this is good and this is bad. And we as a family are going to do this and we're not going to do that. And children are craving a strong, firm, concerned, and present hand in the development of their attitudes towards what's right and what's wrong. And today in the home, the father is declining in his involvement. We are relegating, or we are delegating this authority to someone else. we have become negligent in our fulfillment of this responsibility that Paul mentions in Ephesians the 6th chapter and verse 4. But just as the mother's presence provides that constant affection that forms the emotional bond so vital to a child, so does the presence of the father provide the authority figure, the one who trains and sets guidelines, all of which on the part of the father says to the child, I love you. You're important to me. That you're now secure. I'm looking out for your best interests. I do care where you are. I do care what time you come in on a date. I do care who you're going out with. I do care about this and that and the other. And from now on, or as of now, or whatever, in our family, we do this, that, and the other. And children must have this because it says to them, I love you. Listen, if you will. The failure to set limits intensifies the feeling of unconcern and leaves a residue of poor inner discipline and of inability to delay gratification. And the tendency to punish children by withdrawal of attention and affection increases the sense of being unacknowledged and rejected. That's also from The Quest for Reality by this man, Mr. Nikolai II. Here again, like with the mother, the cause of the father's absence really doesn't make all that much difference. Why you're away from your family in excessive amounts just really doesn't make much difference to the child. He doesn't really care. He cannot understand the why. The what comes through loud and clear, though. And the message that you think he may be getting by your being absent is not the message that he's necessarily getting. The message that he's getting is that you don't have time for him. You may be a hard worker who, out of a desire to provide the physical necessities of life that Paul mentions in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, where if a man does not provide for his own, especially of his own family, the necessities of life, he's worse than an unbeliever. You may be a hard-working man who wants to provide the best things in life for your family, but in order to do so, you have to work in excessive amounts in order to provide things really that are beyond the actual requirements and the necessities of life. And in so desiring to provide those things, you've robbed your family perhaps of your own presence. And when the final analysis is your own presence is so important that you've sold out yourself to provide things that really the family can do without. You may be a preacher who, out of a sense of duty to carry the word, and very likely it may be out of a sense of desire for prominence, where you feel if you ever say no to somebody asking you, will you come and speak, if you ever say no, you're afraid you'll get left out of the circuit and you'll become a has-been, you'll have to take a back seat. So not wanting to be a back seat or not wanting to be a has-been, we keep on accepting more and more appointments and more responsibilities until we become a stranger to our own families. And our children have actually forgotten what it is to have a father. You may be a teacher or an administrator who, out of a desire, a sincere desire, to help other people and to provide what other people's children need as they come here to school or as they are somewhere else under your influence, you may have a sincere desire to help them. But if you do it at the expense of your own children, I think you've made a drastic, terrible mistake. You have a responsibility as a parent. If you didn't want that responsibility, you should not have become a parent. People, I'm convinced that there is no responsibility on the face of the earth as important to a parent as the responsibility for raising his children or her children. I don't think there's any more key function in the development of a stable society than is the function of a mother being in the home and raising those children, and of the father being available and in the home and accessible to those children in those developing years as they grow up toward maturity. You just may be a man, an ordinary man, who finds himself, as many of us find the temptation to be, we find ourselves being involved more and more in external curricula or external activities, extracurricular activities, extracurricular outside the home involvement, such as, well, clubs, sports, whatever it may be, that takes you away from your home, from your children, and says really to them, I don't have the time to be with you. I don't know what your cause is, but the cause really doesn't make all that much difference. The result is the same. Whenever you and I convey to our children, either by word or by deed, that we do not have the time to take up with their problems and their needs and their desires, we communicate to them a message that just simply says, I don't love you. I don't really feel that you're as important as this other is. Now, you may not want to, and you would not say that to him at all. But that's the message that comes through all too often. The result is the same. The absence, listen, quoting, the absence of or uninvolvement of parents induce in the child repeated feelings of rejection and resentment. Here again, it doesn't really make much difference why. The very fact of your absence or uninvolvement with these children produces in them feelings of rejection and resentment. In the same article, in This Quest for Reality by the man, Mr. Nicolai II, he makes this statement. Now, let me first of all mention, though, a passage out of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 10. In 1 Peter 2:10, there's a very unusual passage there that I think relates to this problem. Listen to in 2 Peter 2:10. He talks about how that God has punished the ungodly and how he has delivered the godly out of temptation. In verse 9, he says, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and how to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment. But now notice, he mentions two things here that are especially odious, that are especially worthy of the Lord's condemnation and judgment. He said, especially those who indulge in the lust of defiling passions and despise authority. These two characteristics, those who indulge in the lust of defiling passions, and secondly, those who despise authority. If you had had Simon Peter, by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, stood in the United States on this day in this year, and evaluated the two most outstanding characteristics of the emotional climate of American youth today in the subculture, in the general fiber of the culture that we find growing up around us today, he could not have hit more accurately the two most outstanding characteristics had he tried for 1,000 years. These two characteristics stand out like sore thumbs as being the two that most predominantly characterize the young people and the new culture that is threatening our culture today. And you know what science says causes it? If you're looking for some kind of a cause, and determinism today thinks that nobody's responsible for anything, and they blame everything on everybody else, but that's not what I'm doing. But I'm simply saying that science at least has pointed to a cause of these things. And if we're going to escape causing a stumbling block to be thrown before children, then we're going to have to get out of the way and get out of the practice that causes these things in our children. Science points to the absent mother and to the inaccessible father as being the chief causes for both of these, the unlimited license and free love in society, this attitude of complete abandonment to sexual promiscuity, and this thing of the despising of authority. Science points to the home where the mother is absent and the father is inaccessible and says these are the two culprits. All right, let me show you something, and I think it will at least prove this or make you think about it. This thing, first of all, of the defiling passions. I'm quoting again from This Quest for Reality. The type of family background I have described earlier, and that is the inaccessible parents, this type of background results in profound loneliness and a sense of not belonging. A great deal of the sexual behavior, and he's talking here about the promiscuous, uninhibited, totally abandoned sexual behavior of a new morality, a great deal of that sexual behavior is an attempt to overcome this loneliness. Characterizing these free lovers of this age, he says, is number one, a poor control of sexual and aggressive impulses with anger, especially anger toward the father, that is, the father that was inaccessible to the son or to the daughter, especially anger toward the father. And then he goes on and lists depression and other characteristics that are part of the makeup of these young people today, of the subculture. Secondly, he says, an impotence and an intense homosexual concern. Do you see what he's saying? He said, because of inaccessible fathers and absent mothers, there has developed in our young people today this inordinate, excessive abandon to this finding of someone to accept them and make them feel like they were wanted, and they're exploring and trying to find this gratification through unlimited, excessive participation in sexual intercourse. And he says this is one of the explanations for this phenomena today. The second thing that he mentions, that Simon Peter mentions, is this thing of despising of authority. We're living today in a time, I guess, that's perhaps unprecedented as far as a total disregard and a total hatred for and disrespect for authority. I'm not enough of a historian to know whether this phenomena is peculiar to our age or not. I'm sure it probably isn't. But I know one thing. We stand in an age today where there is very little respect for authority on any level. It doesn't make any difference whether it's national or local or domestic or whatever. It just doesn't matter. What's caused it? Well, the Harvard University riot that took place some years ago, from which this man made his study, this Mr. Nicolai made his study, and drew these conclusions, that study and that riot, it says, brought out one fact. One fact emerged with remarkable clarity: the remoteness and invisibility of some administrators had alienated a large segment of the college community and set the emotional backdrop for the riot or disorder. The behavior of remote, uninvolved professors and administrators parallels the behavior of parents in the childhood homes of many of today's students. And he said that these young people being raised in that kind of an atmosphere at home, and the resentment and the alienation that was bred in them as young people, when they got away to college and found in a college situation the same remote, unidentifiable, invisible, uninvolved leadership in the college, it was just simply said that that was what produced this emotional backdrop for the riot, where the people exhibited such a complete and total contempt for authority. Listen, if you will, again. I think there's another quote. No, that's the last one. But he just simply parallels it and talks about how that it is so essential for parents to provide this nurturing period for the child, and how that a father's place in the home must not be one where he is inaccessible to the children, but where he is always accessible to them, where he provides the leadership, where he provides the nurturing and the admonition, and that if you don't provide it for a child, he feels rejected and he feels like he's not really accepted and not wanted, and he feels insecure. And it results, at least as far as this study, and I think other studies corroborate this, it results in a general breakdown. Because you see, respect for authority is learned in the home. And if you don't learn it in the home, you're going to be hard-pressed to learn it anywhere else, because it's not being taught today in the schools. The states and the federal courts won't allow you to show discipline in the state schools today to any degree. If you don't learn it in the home, you're going to be hard-pressed to learn it in the school. If you don't learn it in the school, it's going to be too late to learn it when you get out into society. But failing to learn it in the home and failing to be taught it in the schools and failing to have the proper disciplinary action being brought in a police sense of a law and order society, people just simply grow up never learning any respect for authority. And you can trace it right back to the father who was always inaccessible or who was absent or who did not set guidelines for the children and did not show this authority in the home. And perhaps the wife who refused to be in subjection to her husband, to where no one in the home ever saw any exercise of authority and any respectful respect or any significant respect for authority in the home. And as a result, children grow up without it. Well, what are we going to do? We can do two or three things, and I mentioned this in closing. One, restore the mother to the home and thus provide the children with a feeling of being wanted and a feeling of self-worth. Put the mother back in the home. Two, put the father back in the home and let him function as a father. And let him serve as the guiding hand and the one who sets the guidelines. And let him serve as the one who is available for advice and available for counseling. Thirdly, put God back in the home so that the home will have the proper basis. Fourthly, restore the home as the center of activity in this age when the home has become everything but that. These are four recommendations that I would give, but let me say this. Whatever you do, you better do it fast. If you've got children, you better give it precedence. You better put some priorities out. You better examine yourself and find out what really is important to you, because your children aren't going to be with you forever. There's a plaque out here, a bulletin board, that simply says this. It reads, better find time now. Soon their toys will be put away. And there's a little rocking chair and a doll in it and a boot and a gun, I think, or a toy. Said, you better find time now. Soon their toys will be put away. As much as I find that this work here is so challenging and important, I made it abundantly clear to the elders when they asked me to move here. I said one thing, one stipulation was all I made. It wasn't about salary, it wasn't about anything. I made this one statement. Is there any reason why I would have reason to suspect that my coming here to work with this congregation would cause me to be less able to carry out my duty as a father? If there is, say so now. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole if my coming here would make it so that I could not fulfill my responsibilities as a parent, and I would have never come. Had they even hesitated, had they hum and hawed around to try to find out the answer, I would have said, forget it, I'm not coming. But they didn't. They said, no, there's no reason. But I found out.